Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Kieran Tavam, now back in London after returning from a very humid Houston. And I'm joined by two individuals who people will be familiar with, one maybe more so than the other. I'm joined by my usual co-host, JJ Duke, out in New York. JJ, is that where you are?
Close enough, I guess. Technically Connecticut, but it's about 45 minutes of a drive.
Okay.
35 if you do it my speed limit.
Okay, well, that's close in US terms. So, yeah, Connecticut, but New York. So, yeah, welcome back, my friend. And we are joined by another individual that people will recognize, Jen Gordon. Jen, you're in Maryland, right?
Yep.
Not a bad memory, eh? Not a bad memory. I remembered that. I remembered that. You didn't tell me before we came onto recording in case anyone thinks that. The purpose of getting JJ and Jen on is to do a little bit of a review of the NWSL season. The campaign obviously came to a close in the last week with the NWSL Championship taking place in Houston with the Western New York Flash coming out on top on penalty kicks. So no breaks going through this one, guys. I think we'll just work our way through. So I was at the game. I've kind of given my views through articles that I've written and I've appeared on other podcasts, and I'll chip in where needs be. But I'd be interested to get your views on the game. And Jen, I'll start with you. Obviously, you cover the Washington Spirit. I'm sure you know a lot of those players better than JJ and myself. It must have been, I guess, a difficult watch from back at home.
Yeah, it was pretty difficult. They were 30 seconds away from their first championship, and you see how far they've come. It was gut-wrenching, and I feel like even neutrals watching that game, you kind of were like the emotion that was there for them, obviously. I thought it was really interesting to see Jim Cabrera kind of go with a three center back system. For most of the game, for the majority of the game, it was effective, and I think that was a pretty interesting move. I don't think a lot of people saw it coming, but I think he didn't win this game, but I think it's going to be interesting going into next season to see if teams maybe try to use that against Western New York, because we saw what they did against the Portland Thorns, who I think most people would agree have the most talented team. So I thought that was interesting. Anytime you go to PKs, that's also just gut-wrenching. That's just gut-wrenching. That's not what anybody who watches soccer really wants to see. So I think it was, even though I think the actual 90 minutes a game, it sometimes is pretty boring. I thought, extra time and PKs are pretty interesting. And I also have to say, a lot of people were doubting Crystal Dunn throughout the season and talking about how she'd only scored 2 goals. She came up huge in this final, and I think she, again, reminded people why she's so special. And I think a lot of it comes down to kind of the system you play and how much the attack is on her to actually score rather than maybe, I don't want to say be a decoy, but kind of be a decoy.
No, I completely agree. I mean, it was the first opportunity that I've had to see Crystal Dunn play in person. Obviously, I've seen her play on TV and on YouTube streams. Unbelievable when you see her up close. The ball control, the movement, the pace is like nothing else. And I know that there are individuals who think she could go on to be one of, if not the best players in the world. And she certainly made her mark on that final despite being on the losing team. JJ, I'll come to you in a minute and I might ask you to focus maybe more on the Flash. But Jen, I guess there's 3 things that came out of that final for me. Number one, you've already covered, which was the 3 centre-backs. All through the week when we had media days and press conferences with Jim Gabara, he was questioned and pressed on who he would go with in terms of his centre-backs. Would it be Whitney Church? Would it be Megan Oyster? Would it be Jelena Zdorsky? Obviously, he ended up playing all of them. The result of playing all 3 was that Joanna Lohmann didn't make the team, and we saw how influential she'd been. I saw you tweet that actually you thought she was worthy of being mentioned in, if not the first team, the second team of the season. And obviously the other talking point was probably the most disappointing and the most gut-wrenching, in a term that you're using, the 3 players that missed the PKs, Diana Matheson, Ali Krieger, Tori Huster, the 3 players who've been at that club since day one. That was a difficult watch.
That was extremely difficult. Talking to Huster and Matheson a couple weeks prior to the final, actually before the final game of the regular season, you can just tell how much they care about the team and how much they're invested in, you know, and how proud they are of how far they've come. And for them to, it was almost like you could feel the pressure on them. Like they felt so much pressure, and it was very hard to see. But, you know, I think they have to take pride in how far that, you know, those three especially have carried that team forward. So I think that's definitely something that anybody who can appreciate how much they've put into the club and how much they've invested in, you know, Tori especially has talked about the loyalty she's felt from the fan base there and how she's very loyal to the Spirit and how important loyalty is to her. So I think that's, you know, just awful because nobody wanted it more than those three. As far as the center back thing, it's been kind of one of these stories that's been played out throughout the year, because I think if any of those two, because they have four center backs, any of the, I'd say if you had played Estelle Johnson, Megan Oyster, or Selena Dorsky had been available the entire year, any of those three could have possibly been in the discussion for best 11 or second best 11. But when you only have them playing so many games in a season, I think obviously the center back position, you're pretty much only looking at people who have played every game, or if they were in the World Cup, then you kind of give them that kind of benefit of the doubt. If they were or World Cup or the Olympics, you kind of give them that doubt about missing just those games. So I kind of think they kind of took them out of the equation for that. Honestly, it's a difficult decision for Jim to make. I think as far as he rates them all pretty highly, and I think he talked about that post game about basically you almost got the impression that he felt like a parent trying to choose between his kids when he was trying to decide the starting 11. And then also on Lohmann, just the season she had is incredible, especially somebody who's 34. I think it almost speaks to the idea of the importance of having professional women's soccer and how a lot of these women that are playing this league haven't reached their peak. They continue to get better every year. And, you know, because, you know, they have the ability to play in games against, you know, best competition in the world. And it's been really interesting to see, especially with her, you know, past relationship with Jim Cabrera, how they were able to heal and get past that, because he had been her coach previously in WPS and had put her basically on a reserve contract. And so they had to get past all of that. And I think that just shows how maturity also as like people. So I think that was a very interesting story. I think she should have been in either the first, probably more like second 11. But I think there's especially for midfielders, if you're not putting up a lot of like good stats, like as far as goals, assists, things that people can look at, it's a lot harder for people to rate you high. I think we had that, there's a whole huge discussion about Rookie of the Year, which we'll get into later, but like a lot of what Raquel Rodriguez does isn't going to show up in a score sheet. But Joanna Loma was kind of like the engine in that midfield, and it was a great, I thought it was a, you know, between Naren and Huster too, it was a great midfield together, and they collectively, there were the only three that really played every game for the Spirit. So it was a huge loss when she couldn't go into the game later because of what happened to Capri Sidasco too.
Yeah,
so it was kind of interesting how that all played out.
Completely agree. And actually, I'm reading Carly Lloyd's book at the moment, and I'm not very far into it, but right at the beginning, she talks about coming through kind of the college system and how before she went to college, her and Joanna Lohmann played in a similar area, and Joe was actually kind of one of the star players in the area, was an absolute boss in midfield, and Carly actually speaks about how she almost looked up to Joe and the ability that she had. And as you say, we've seen her, even at the age of, I didn't know she was 34, one of the few players still playing that's older than me. You know, certainly a big influence on that Spirit side. As you say, Jim Gabara said in his post-match that it was difficult. He wasn't able to bring her on because of the injury that Capri Sidasco suffered. Obviously, that's now been confirmed as an ACL tear, so we wish her the very best in her recovery. But yeah, I can't really add much more to what you've said. I thought the Spirit were the better side. Even Western New York admitted that when Abby Ertzig and Paul Riley came in to the press conference after the game. They admitted that they were second best for large parts of the game. And I guess, JJ, this is probably where I bring you in, mate, in terms of giving an overview of what you made of Western New York. I thought, personally, they were slow to get going, and we saw that with the early goal from Crystal Dunn. But I'm going to I'm going to sing the praises here of Sam Mewis, because while Lynn Williams and Jess McDonald have probably taken the majority of the headlines this season, I genuinely think that Sam Mewis is a player that they look to build this franchise around, because when she was needed in the semi-final, she stepped up. And when she was needed in the final, okay, take her penalty out of the equation, she stepped up. And while she doesn't maybe get the plaudits that some of the further forward players get, I think she's been superb for the club this year.
Which is funny, because when we talk about what Jen said earlier with the spirit about how, you know, how deep that team was, and I think, you know, that might even, the fact that, you know, to go off of that for just a quick second, how deep that team is, you look at some of the players that didn't get in that Jen said, and they were there from day one of this season, playing throughout the season. That kind of carries over a little bit into the Flash here. Now, for the majority of that team, minus Erceg, minus Kennedy, minus Sam Mewis, they're all there pretty much, and Sabrina D'Angelo as well, they're all there from start to finish this year. So that was a team that was very well-knit. There weren't a lot of holes that were needed to be plugged during that Olympic tune-up break, where there a lot of teams missed out on their big stars. But then when you look at it, what you're going to say, Kieran, with Sam Mewis, is that you have those caliber of players that, even so, they don't skip a beat right after a major tournament. They're back in. They're going full 90s, or in this case, full 120s. And you're right. I mean, you know, Sam Mewis, she needed to take that chance that she did inside a quarter of an hour, because Crystal Dunn scores a good quality goal there. You'd have thought that Washington perhaps might be able to have the legs to outrun a team that loves to run and gun offensively. And that goal, not only did it instill a bit of confidence into Western New York, I think that was the key thing to slow that match down from then to become a tactical warfare. And that's really how this contest became the thing that it was, where both coaches had to reshuffle the deck multiple times throughout that match, because you would think if Washington took one of their chances in the second half, you would have saw the likes of a Joe Lohman probably come in the last 20 minutes to see it out. You didn't have that happen. So now you go into extra time. All right, you've already used yourself two of your subs during the full 90. You get a goal. And then you bring in a forward, because at the end of it, Francisco Ortega was just, she was out of gas at that point. It was cramping on multiple occasions, so you're out of the three subs. And, you know, credit Western New York. You said it right, Kieran. They were not the better team in that match, but sometimes in those finals, you don't need to be the best team. You just need to find a way to get a result. And in minute 124, I mean, who would have thought that that's Abby Wambach time in 2011 World Cup. I mean, even Landon Donovan time in 2010 Men's World Cup. You don't have that happen a whole lot, and she took the chance. So fair play to her, and I think, you know, the penalties, they weren't the cleanest of them, but at the same time, someone tweeted out, well, Sabrina D'Angelo didn't do a whole lot. Those shots were not hard. You still have to make the saves, and she did. So yeah, that's why she gets all the plaudits.
I saw comments like that. I wrote a piece on Sabrina D'Angelo for the equaliser, and saw a comment or two underneath saying, well, they weren't hard saves. I'm sorry, but the goalkeeper's job is to try and judge which way the strike is going to go. And if they dive the wrong way, and even if the ball is the slightest bit in the middle, it's going in. You know, if they've dived out of the way of it, you've got to stand up big. And she stood up big to save three penalties in a major final. That makes you worthy of being MVP for that alone. You are the most valuable player to your team because you have been responsible for helping that team overcome the challenge. And I'll be honest, I don't think there was really a standout player in the game as a whole. I think Jen's right. I thought Crystal Dunn had periods, and the two goals, the second one in particular, was ridiculous. You know, that showed what class she has. But, you know, we've said already, the Western New York Flash weren't on the top of their game. Paul Riley admitted that in the press conference. Jess McDonald was quiet. Lynn Williams was quiet. But they got the result when it mattered. And Sabrina D'Angelo, when you save three penalties in a shootout, you are deserving of that MVP.
You get a statue built of yourself outside the stadium when you save three penalties in a final.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you have to do well enough to stop one, but you have to have that mindset of, you know, the job is a goalie. It's so simple. But your job is to keep your team in the game, to give your team a chance to win. And she did that. So, you know, and this is nothing new for her. For people that watched her in the college game with the University of South Carolina, she made plenty of stops on penalties in big matches. So this doesn't come, I guess maybe more so for fans of North American women's soccer, this isn't a big surprise. But, you know, if there was any a player for me, Kieran, that stood out, because you're asking if there was a standout player, if you go with the Flash, you did talk about Sam Mewes. I enjoyed the play of Abby Ersig in the back. She was cool, calm, and composed. And that's one of the things I liked about the makeup of this Western New York team. You had a mixture of a lot of young players that were hungry and willing to learn. And they're bringing that sponge type persona into every practice, into every match, and just soaking up all the information that they can get. And then you have these, you know, lustered hard veterans like your Ersigs, like your McCall Zerbonis, like your Elizabeth Eddies, who they still want to get a little more out of their career. Of, you know, they're solid professionals, but they still want to keep building and keep winning. And when you have that combination together and then combine it with the backroom staff, you know, it's going to lead to a lot of good things. And, you know, like I said, the Flash, they made it work that day.
Yeah, I agree completely. And if you look at the half the team that took to the field, they were all drafted within the last year, the likes of Mackenzie Donyek this year, and then you've got Sam and Abby Dolkemper, who I think was, again, very, very good at centre-back, and obviously she's been rewarded with a call-up to the US Women's National Team. They have a lot of good balance there between young heads and experienced players, and it's interesting you talk about Abby Ersig, who's been deployed as more of a holding midfielder this year. I spoke to her before the game and asked her how she's been enjoying it, and she said, well, I wouldn't really say that enjoying it is the right word, but it's certainly been something that I've, you know, had to adapt to, and it's benefited my game. Because, you know, I was speaking to a journalist who I shall remain unnamed, and we agreed that she didn't have a great season in Chicago last year, and you turn it around and she's now lifting the trophy. It's a great turnaround for her. But it's interesting that you were talking about Sabrina D'Angelo having a statue. She might need one, because when she walked into the press conference after the game, she actually dropped her MVP award. So maybe a statue could make up for that. But I did get some comments from Sabrina from the press conference and from afterwards. So seeing as she's the MVP, I thought it would be important to play some of those comments. So here's Sabrina.
Sabrina, if we could get your thoughts on the match.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of go off of what they said, it obviously wasn't our prettiest match, but we fought through the whole game, and like they said, Washington did play better than us, but, I mean, we kept fighting, and to get that goal in the last minutes, I was... nothing felt better than that, and to win in PKs, it was great.
For Sabrina, can you take us through your view of, you know, where you were, what you saw on Lynn's tying goal, and kind of your thoughts that surrounded that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I was in the back and I just saw the ball go and I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And you saw Lenny coming towards it, and then she heads in and it's like, yes! It was just an unbelievable feeling. As soon as she scored, I had no doubt in my mind that we would get the job done.
Sabrina, yes. Going into that penalty shootout, psychologically, how big was it going into it off the back of the equaliser, as opposed to maybe being in Kelsey's position? Obviously they're a few seconds away from gaining victory. How much practice have you done in the week on PKs as well? And Paul, I know you weren't able to communicate very much with the team today, but based on your experiences with the losses that you had in the WPS, what were you able to tell the team in the week if the game had gone to penalty kicks in terms of preparation, what they might need to do?
Sure. I mean, just like being able to go into PKs and knowing that Linny was able to get that goal for us and the team did so well to equalize the game, it was my turn to kind of, my job to save the day. And I mean, it's just a gut feeling. As soon as Lenny scored, I knew we were going to win in PKs. And I mean, just the confidence and the sureness that I was going to save. And it's funny, one of the players said, Tay said, you're going to save three of them. And it's just funny the way it worked out. But yeah, I couldn't have done it without them equalizing it on the field.
Yeah, and the penalties, I mean, we take penalties every day for, what, 2 months now, two and a half months?
Yep.
It's hard playing, you know, taking penalties against there every day, because she's going to say, sooner or later, Sam says, boss, she knows where I'm going, and I just hit it harder. a little bit firmer. But obviously, when it comes down to penalties, I think you just don't know what the personalities will actually do in the moment. But we prep for it a lot. We talked about it a lot. I think, you know, we had a big staff meeting this morning for a couple of hours to talk about every single scenario that could possibly happen, from the subs that they would make to the subs that we would make. And just the kind of, you know, would we need to settle them down at halftime? Would we need to G them up at halftime, into overtime? We said we'd go to penalties. We all said we would win on penalties. That's what we all said this morning. So I guess it came lucky for us. And it was our turn to win. And Sab's obviously, you know, she's really good on penalty kicks. She's low to the ground, got low centre of gravity. She puts, you know, she gambles. And I had my what's name in the glass thing. I was going, just gamble, Sabs, just gamble, just go, just gamble, just gamble, just gamble. Just hope to God she did. And she gambled the right way, thank heavens.
So congratulations to Sabrina D'Angelo. Guys, I don't know if you want to kind of wrap this one up before we sort of look at the season as a whole, but I don't know if you've got any kind of talking points that you wanted to maybe raise. I don't know if there was, obviously the attendance I thought was decent for a neutral venue, 8,300, considering you didn't have the likes of Portland, who we know will have brought a lot of supporters. In fact, there were supporters there from Portland who clearly thought they were likely to get to the final before they'd even qualified. But Jen, was there anything that you took from the final that we haven't discussed already?
The importance of the draft, perhaps, because, you know, Western New York, if you look at how they got there and how they put this team together, how important was that 2015 draft for them? And, you know, I think looking forward, the only way to really build a team in this league, just because, you know, we're getting so big and you're not going to get so many allocations, the only way to really, really build a team is through the draft, I think. So it's really interesting to see how that's all shaping out. And it's kind of funny that the coach that kind of the team that shows it is coached by Paul Riley, who's been known for not really liking the draft, at least in this league. There's some debate on that and whether he did or not in WPS, but I think that's like an interesting thing to think about.
No, I agree. And I could be mistaken. Off the top of my head, I think Western New York have got two top 10 picks for 2017 as well. So
2 and 7, I believe, right now.
Yeah, that's what I had in my head, 2 and 7. So they're going to be in a great position to even add more young quality to that squad. And you think, you know, at the start of the season, it was the likes of Lady Andrada, and there was the South Korean player who completely has escaped my head. Was it Juan Ul, who came over and barely kicked a ball? And, you know, those were the players that maybe people focused on at the start of the season. But actually, as you've said, it was that combination of the kids that came in from the draft and the players that we've mentioned already, the likes of Abby Ertzig, Jess McDonald, and McCall Zaboni, who really did lead those young players well, is what essentially has got them the championship win. JJ, back to you, mate. Was there anything that you took from the game that we haven't covered already?
Not really, but I think on a bit of a cheekier note, someone needs to get Sergio Ramos and Sabrina D'Angelo together and tell them to hold on to major trophies. Let's not break things that are special.
Yeah, for anyone that doesn't know what JJ is referring to, Sergio Ramos dropped the trophy off the side of a bus. I think it was last year or the year before. And I think we've spoken enough about the NWSL Championship. I think the one thing that was really key for me, historic this one, because it was the fourth NWSL Championship final, and it's the first time that we've had a fourth final in US soccer, because obviously WUSA and WPS both folded after their third years. So I think it's really important to mention that. The league is growing. The league continues to have talk about expansion. And we're not going to talk about that on this show. We'll certainly talk about that on a future one. But I think it's in a good place. And I think it's certainly something that we can build on and the teams will build on. And it's not without fault. We saw some very silly things go on this season, and we'll maybe talk about some of those as we do the season review. But I thought it was a good final. Not a classic, but certainly some drama. And PKs are never a bad thing. But, as I said, I want to move on and I want to do a little bit of a review of the season and also talk about the rewards. Sorry, not the rewards. The awards that were handed out. And we're going to select our own, because I know there are some that we don't necessarily agree with. So, Jen, let's come to you. I mean, as I said just now, fourth NWSL season, historic. First time we've had a fourth season. When you look back, what would you say the highlight of the season was for you? I know it's difficult to pick one, but maybe there was a theme, or maybe there was something that you'd like to pick out.
It's so funny this year when I think back, And this generally isn't the case for me, but a lot of the things that stand out to me weren't necessarily things that were necessarily about the field of play. I think back to the first game of the season, and, you know, we're doing this whole Washington 15th anniversary of the first professional season, and we all know how big a part Washington, D.C. played in the first league. And so in that first game, Callie Ferguson comes on the field, and she is just completely overwhelmed. And you can see it from, you know, the game ends, and she comes over to do the post-game presser, and she's just completely overwhelmed. And I think that's a moment, it's one of those really special moments that you get to see, and it kind of sticks with you. But then also, the Orlando tragedy, both or when Orlando played at D.C. and just how everybody in the stadium came together was incredible and heart-wrenching all at the same time. And then obviously I think on the field, probably the best moment that I would have to say is going to stick with me for, you know, a really long time would have to be Jasmine Spencer's game winner for Orlando's first game at home after the tragedy. And obviously it wasn't that it was this spectacular goal. I think it was just the meaning behind it and how you could just collectively feel a catharsis from everyone in the stadium except for Houston was just incredible. It's just one of those moments that you're going to continue to keep with you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's one of the things we always can come back to, isn't it, that soccer brings people together. And the way that Washington handled the situation when Orlando came into town, I thought was really, really special. And as you say, that game when they were back in Orlando with Jasmine Spencer's winner was something I'm sure people won't forget in a hurry. JJ, I'll move over to you, mate. What were the kind of highlights for you this season?
I think Jen hit a lot of on the, you know, the specific themes and highlights in terms of, you know, the instances on the field for positive ways. We're not going to dwell on the negativity that, you know, there's some of them that happened this year. Obviously, that game on that baseball field. And funny enough, as I said before on prior shows, Kieran, how funny those 3 points for Western New York Flash ended up being a key factor in how they vaulted into the playoffs as opposed to Seattle just missing out. But we're not going to talk about that. I think really the big thing that stood out for me is that you can't be complacent with where you are in terms of how team by team went about it. You know, we got some nice parity this year. Teams that were at the top for a couple of years now realized that you just, it's great to have a core, but you have to find new infusion. And it just can't be going back to the same old well and the same things over and over again. You have to change yourself a little bit. I think when I talked with Mark Parsons, it was before the semifinal, he said that this was the toughest edition of the league in the 4 years because of how many times his team specifically had to adapt to playing in different styles. Now, granted, a lot of that was due to players going out, in and out through the major tournaments that happened this year and the friendlies and all the extra buildup. And obviously with the U.S. national team falling in the quarterfinals of the Olympics, but then Canada rising up at the same time and securing bronze. You know, there was a lot of things that teams had to adapt off the field, on the field. And then in the supplement part, I think youth was served this year. I think the young players, their first-year rookies, maybe even the second-year professionals, really came to play this season. I think that's what, you know, Jen said, that it's brilliant that this league is now continuing to grow and grow. And I know, Kieran, you said this as well, as now we may even start to use Roman numerals for our championship game, you know, NWSL Championship V for 5. I mean, that would just be something nice to see as well. But that's a key cog of the fact that we're now starting to see that growth. And oh, by the way, I believe this is the first freshman college class that will now have had 4 years while they've been all at school to look forward to playing in a professional league when they graduate. So I think that's a key thing to build on. And hopefully, you know, we're going to have a big draft this year. There are a lot of good players that are going to be available. And hopefully teams are just going to keep improving, getting better. And we may scratch the surface at some point to say that this league may be the best in the world.
Yep. I think you've made some really good points there. I don't really have anything to add. I think you guys have hit the nails on the head. I think my highlight would have been pretty much what you just finished up with there, JJ, on the young players. I think it's always good to see young players entering the league and hitting the ground running. And I think this year, more than any, we really did see them come to the forefront. Obviously, we see young players given more of a chance when players are off on national team duty, whether that be for the US or for Euro qualifiers or whatever it might be. But I really do think this year we saw a lot of players, and maybe some that we weren't expecting. You know, and we'll talk about some of those when we talk maybe about Rookie of the Year and MVP, for example. Some players that maybe came to the forefront that we weren't necessarily expecting to. But yeah, I think it's been overall a really positive season. And I said we don't talk about negatives, and I don't want to talk about negatives, but let's maybe talk about disappointments, because I think that's different. Jen, was there any major disappointment for you this season in terms of how the season went or unfolded?
I think maybe, I don't want to get into specific instances, but I think maybe the disappointing thing is that the only time this league can get any headlines with any major, you know, sports websites or media is when the bad things happen. Like, no one, obviously, ever wants to talk about anything good that happens or, you know, spectacular moments, you know, spectacular saves or, you know, like Joanna Lohman's bicycle kick in the first game. Nobody wants to talk about moments like that, but they'll certainly find airtime or, you know, inches in their online to talk about, you know, the negative things that happen. So that's kind of disappointing, but, you know, that's always going to happen, I guess, but I don't like to see that.
JJ?
Disappointments for me is how the heck we're in year four and we don't have some sort of a television deal that just only covers the last month of the season. I mean, we compare it to WPS and Fox Soccer Channel, which granted is not a thing in this country anymore. We had a game of the week every week at a specific time, which I think it was like Sunday at about 5. We had a game that was on television and a lot of people saw it. We don't have that yet. And that's really disappointing to me because there were some really good games in the months of April, May, and June that even Fox could have used to pump, you know, to pump up their Olympic, you know, pre-coverage. It could have been, guys, remember, we had this World Cup. We have all these great players in this league. And, oh, by the way, they're going to be playing again for the national teams. But, nope, we get to watch two duds of a regular season game and two games – or excuse me, one game in the regular season, the only other regular season game between Western New York and Portland, which granted was a great game, but it was already going to be two teams that we were going to see 2 weeks later. So can we please hammer a deal out? I don't care if it's a game a month or a game every 2 weeks, just something that's better than what we have.
Okay. No, I don't disagree. I must confess, doesn't really affect us that our an international audience. Obviously, when it's on TV, sometimes they're not on YouTube, so we may well lose out. So from a selfish perspective, it doesn't really concern me too much, but I can understand from a local perspective for you guys out in the US, it's a massive deal, and the league is growing and is a professional sport, so why is it not getting the same sort of deals that maybe other professional sports are getting? But I think the disappointment for me was some of the scheduling. We have the same problem over here in England, and there are issues that exist still in the NWSL. That ridiculous game that was rearranged, I think it was between, was it Houston and Washington? Was rearranged during the Olympics, and there were games that were all at the same time on one evening, which made it very difficult to watch, or certainly back-to-back. And there are still issues for me that exist with some of the scheduling. I think some of the games are difficult to follow because of the timings or the days or the clashes that they have. I'm sure there was a game or two that clashed with a US women's national team game, maybe a couple of hours kicking off beforehand or something like that. You know, how are you supposed to follow both if they're kicking off next door to each other? So that would be a disappointment for me. But actually, I think, do you know what, based on the things that we've picked out, that shows the league wasn't too bad, because we're talking about things that really none of the players can influence. You know, we're talking about off-field issues, that's a very small minority. We're talking about TV deals, the players can't control that. And we're talking about scheduling, and the players can't control that. So actually, I think overall, the players can hold their heads up high and actually give themselves a pat on the back for producing yet another high quality and highly competitive division. I think we should probably, as I said, we're not going to kind of review each team, because that would take quite a while, and there's so many talking points on each individual one, hence why we do individual shows for when we do the previews. But I would like to kind of have a look at some of the NWSL awards that were handed out, and maybe we can give out a couple of our own as well. Let's focus on the ones that the NWSL hand out, and we'll start with goalkeeper of the year. Now, it was Ashlyn Harris that was voted goalkeeper of the year, obviously playing for the Orlando Pride. Jen, did you agree? And if not, who would have got you goalkeeper of the year?
I think Nicole Barnhart should have won. I think I think because of the way she plays and also just her demeanor, maybe that people continue to overlook her, and it's very sad because she's been solid in her entire career with FC Kansas City. So I think that's who I would have gone with. But I think because of Orlando's back line being so unstable, I'll go with that word. Ashlyn had to make some pretty fantastic saves to try to keep them in games. So I think that tends to capture people's attention when they're voting.
JJ?
Yeah, I had Barney as my winner when I submitted my ballot. I had no doubt about it. Look, you know, she kept her team in nearly every contest. We talked about it at length in prior shows, Kieran, that FC Kansas City weren't the same FC KC from years past, and obviously a lot of player retirements and players taking years off, and then also the Olympics happening. Barney was always there to keep her team in that game, in any game, for that matter. I mean, yeah, sure, 83 saves. That's a lot of work that she had to do, but also she tied the league in clean sheets. So minimal help offensively, had to do a lot of work, and still I think that she was the best of the bunch. And to be fair, and this is no disrespect to Ashlyn Harris, I didn't even have her in my top three. I had Betos, I believe, as my two, and I think Nayer as my three. And that's really just more because the point that, you know, when Alyssa Nayer was there in Chicago, she was good. But, yeah, I didn't really see Ashlyn Harris in terms of having much of a debate in my book. But then again, I'm just one vote. So, you know, big congratulations to her for winning it.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we do mention that. And it is, we're not in any way trying to talk negatively of Ashlyn Harris. I spoke on another podcast this week and I said I think it's really important to mention that there's a perception that the media kind of shoot down Ashlyn Harris, and I don't think that's fair. I think actually we do speak very highly of her. We understand she is a class keeper. She has a lot of qualities and she is a worthy individual to be in the women's national team, and she is one of the top goalkeepers in the country. But as I said, we wouldn't be doing our job if we weren't picking out weaknesses. I think sometimes she's a phenomenal shot stopper, there's no question about that, but I think sometimes she's putting herself in a position where she has to make a shot stop because her positioning maybe hasn't been the best. And every goalkeeper's got faults, and not every goalkeeper has great games, and any goalkeeper across the league will have made a mistake or two over the course of the season. But I don't think any goalkeeper or any player should be exempt from criticism just because they're popular with supporters or whoever it might be. But I'm with you guys. Barney would have been my goalkeeper of the year. I think the other goalkeepers you've mentioned are worthy individuals. I'd add Hayley Kottmeyer to that list as well. I thought she stepped in, as she has done every year when Hope Solo's been unavailable, and put in very, very high calibre performances. And I would struggle to kind of divide those below Barnhart, but Barnhart would have been my goalkeeper of the year as well. Moving on, the Becky Sauerbrunn Defender of the Year award was not won by Becky Sauerbrunn this year. It was won by Lauren Barnes. JJ, we'll switch. We'll come to you first. Who was your Defender of the Year?
Well, I did have Abby Dahlkemper as mine. I did have Lou in my top three. And in my original top five, this is a long time ago, Kieran, that we had to put in these.
You don't have to give your top five. He's only looking for your first one.
I had a Dahlkemper Gilliland in there. I think she, if anything, if it wasn't Dahlkemper Gilliland, probably should have gotten it. And I also had Christy Rampone in there. And I think a lot of people don't realize that she stuck out an entire season healthy and was a key factor in not only helping Kristen Grubka continue to grow as a center back and be a potential maybe down the line candidate to have a look in the national team. But by the way, she's still quite good, you know. But I had Abby as my one. I think she was solid all year long.
Jen?
JJ makes a really solid point about Christy Rampone. I think it's a lot like Nicole Barnhart, it's kind of like people forgot, or maybe they just assume they're going to be that good. I'm not really sure which one. I think for me, I don't know, there's this default for Defender of the Year should be center back, but I think I would have gone with Erin Gilliland just because, you know, she switched sides this year. And then if you just look at how amazing the outside backs were for Chicago and how important they were to what Chicago did, you know, I think that she stood out. It was a kind of interesting year with, you know, I think, like I said before, I think if the Spirit had stuck with a back line and a center back pairing, that possibly one of them could have snuck in. So that's kind of where I was at. I have no problems with Lou Barnes getting it. She's been a fantastic player for Seattle for, you know, the entire time that she's been there, and she's very deserving of the award. But it's kind of a hard thing to do because Defender of the Year, you're encapsulating outside backs with center backs, but it seems like it just as a default goes to center back.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, Defender of the Year. Yeah. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
I had Emily Menges as my Defender of the Year. I thought she stepped up big time for Portland this year. They had a ridiculously stingy defense, and I think she played a big part in that, especially when they lost Kat Williamson early on in the season through injury. I thought she was a big player for them this year. We've already mentioned the likes of Lou Barnes. I thought Casey Short was very good this year, and Erica Skorsky for Sky Blue. Christy Rampone is a great shout, because I guess because she's a veteran, we just kind of expect her to play well. But that does not excuse leaving her out or excuse mentioning her, because she was phenomenal, you know, to stay healthy all year. She was available all year, not having gone with the US Women's National Team to the Olympics. She was a worthy nominee as well, in my view. And I think it's nice that we've kind of mentioned a lot of different names. I'm not offended by Lou Barnes winning it. I said that on another podcast. I'm not angry about it. I thought she was very good for Seattle. She was their standout defender. But I think for me, it would be Emily Menges. I thought they'd finished top of the league. They had a stingy defence. Abby Dolkemper's a great shout. I think Erin Gilliland's a great shout. Megan Oyster, I thought, played very well for the Spirit this year as well. There's so many that you could pick. It's very, very difficult to kind of select one. Hence why there's probably a lot of names thrown in. Rookie of the Year. Now, this one's difficult. Jen, I'm not going to go into the debate that you had on social media, but perhaps you'd... Perhaps you'd like to tell us who you would have picked. It was obviously Raquel Rodriguez of Sky Blue that won the award.
You know what? This is one of those awards where you kind of throw your hands up and like, honestly, we haven't seen a year where nobody stood out as little as they did this year. Every other year, it's been pretty clear as to who's going to be Rookie of the Year, from Erica Temrak and you know, Julie Johnston, and then obviously I think last year there was maybe two or three people it really could have been, but you could have made a really stellar argument for each one. This one, I feel like it was kind of like, I don't want to say meh, but it was kind of like meh. I honestly have no qualms with Raquel Rodriguez winning. I think she's a very, very special player, and I think, you know, if you've been following her the last couple of years, the best is yet to come for her, and a lot of what she does, like I said before, isn't going to show up in a stat sheet, but it's very vital, and it's very forward-looking in the game, too, I think. Rachel Daly is another very, very special player. She did some incredible things, but I just don't think she was consistent enough. Leah Galton, I guess you could probably throw her in there as well, but the injury to her hip kind of slowed her down. And then Emily Sonnet, too, but I think what happened to Emily Sonnet is she wasn't playing regularly. She came back, you know, from the Olympics and was kind of rusty, and it showed. So any one of those four you can make a pretty good case for, but nobody blew me away like they did in the years past.
Well, I think it's interesting you say that, because I'm not looking so much. And by the way, at first I was fine with Raquel Rodriguez winning, but the reason why I think there were, you know, as opposed to years past, there was no real standout, you know, talking candidates, is because a lot of our rookies were thrown immediately into the starting lineup, and they acted like they were, you know, they're professionals and they were there before and were doing their job, as opposed to maybe in some years past where you have only maybe two, three, four rookies were starting and you had others that are coming off the bench. I mean, I pulled out the draft sheet from this past January, and I'm looking at it right now, and I'm going up and down the list, and I see multiple starters in each round, and yes, even going into the fourth round, which that's something that we've never said before, but we've had players drafted in the fourth round that were starting on a consistent basis, a player in the third round that were starting on a consistent basis, second round, first round, so on and so forth. So I'm with you, Jen, on the fact that we didn't have a standout, but I think it's because we had a lot of rookies that put in really solid performances, but professional solid, if that kind of makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't have much to add, to be honest with you. I'm pretty much doing the same as you, JJ. I've got the list in front of me, and when you look at the first round, second round, third round, there's plenty of starters. Like you say, there's one or two from the fourth round as well. It was a really, really difficult one this season. I think the biggest issue was is that no one had that blinding season right from start to finish. They all had periods of the season where they kind of shone. Rachel Daly hit the ground running with the goal on the opening game, and then the Dash went, what was it, six games, losing 1-0 on the spin. Then she had a stint at the end of the season. Leah Galton missed the start of the year because she was still in college, came in, hit the ground running, and then, as you said, Jen, got injured towards the end of the season. I think another one we haven't mentioned is Mackenzie Donjak. Obviously, she has now got a championship title. I think she grew into the season and really hit the ground running in the business end of the season when it really mattered. But I struggle to look past Rocky. I really do. I think half the thing as well is that a lot of people had Sky Blue to do poorly this year, me included. I've held my hands up. I had them finishing bottom. And when you have the likes of Rocky and Leah Galton and Erica Skrorski, who I think was drafted in the third round, and Erica's played the vast majority of the season, you have to give those players credit because they're coming into a difficult environment where people aren't really expecting them to perform.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, that's kind of that mentality that that Sky Blue team took this year, and it almost kind of segues nicely into Kieran. I'm going to steal your thunder, and I do apologize because maybe perhaps you'd had the next person of the award on the list was the coach of the year. But that's because of the fact that Christy Holly got that entire team to buy into the fact that they're a lot better than what people thought that they were going to be. And they did that. They didn't finish in the playoffs. They didn't make the playoffs, but they got a lot of people thinking that it's not a ragtag team, but it's a team that no one almost really wanted, if you will. And they made the best of the situation. They played for each other. They fought for each other. And they got a fair few results in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll move on to Coach of the Year now. I mean, I'll very quickly finish. As I said, Rocky Rodriguez, for me, a worthy winner of Rookie of the Year. I've got to throw Leah and Rachel in there, being fellow Brits. I thought it's a big deal for a club to burn an international roster spot on a draft pick because you never know what's going to happen. But for those two to hit the ground running like they did and have the seasons that they did, Rachel's obviously been called into the England squad. Leah was called into an England squad but had to pull out because of her injury. I think she's still nursing that injury and will, as a result, hasn't been called into an England squad since. But for me, those two are worthy kind of runners-up to Rocky for me. I think they were at points of the season almost unplayable, especially Leah with her pace down the wing. Coach of the Year. Well, JJ, you've touched on Christy Holly. I'll come back to you in a minute, though. Jen, Coach of the Year for you. Obviously, the winner was Mark Parsons. Did you agree with that?
It's so hard. I think the hardest thing about Coach of the Year is that every coach has a different situation and different challenges, and so you're trying to think of like which challenge is harder and who overcame the most. Honestly, looking at what Portland's been through the first 3 years of the league, and they never really lived up to expectations. They never really, it seems like there were problems with the culture, and Mark came in and turned that around. And I had no qualms with him winning. I would, agree with him winning. But I also see the arguments for Cabrera and then also Holly. I think what Holly did was a completely different challenge. And it's very hard to kind of compare the two because they are completely different. But Parsons also came into it. And I know you're not supposed to compare years, but, Parsons has dealt with lots of different challenges. And if you look at his body of work, I don't think really you can argue against him getting a Coach of the Year award at this point. So at the end of the day, I'm fine with it.
JJ?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I put my case out there for Christie. I did vote for Mark Parsons as my one, but I had Holly as my two, and gosh, who did I have as my three? I had Paul Riley in there, but you know, it's almost kind of ironic that we're picking Coach of the Year at the end of the regular season, and naturally, of course, we have to have one team that wins, and then everyone's going to sing the laurels of the coach of the team that wins it, and that's obviously Paul Riley. And he had his own, as Jen said, challenge to, you know, he wasn't even the coach until, what, February? He somehow turns that club around and wins a title. So I think everyone had their story to how they went about this year, and I agree that Riley is a deserving candidate, but I think also what Mark Parsons did restored the luster a little bit. And I know he told me that this is only the beginning of what he has in store for that team, so I think that Mark is, if you know, he was the winner, and he's a deserving candidate.
Yeah, I struggle to kind of disagree with anything that you guys have said. I think Mark, very difficult to disagree with him being named Coach of the Year, for the reason that, and I said it elsewhere, he came into the job that has the most pressure riding on it. Number one, that club suffered a poor season under Paul Riley last year, and number two, he's come into that club off the back of two playoff appearances. So to be able to try and match what he did at Washington was always going to be a big ask. He does have a talented roster, but as we know with that roster, they lost a lot of players to the Olympics, and he had to try and deal with that situation. He has managed to bring in players that were there for the whole season, the likes of Dagny Brynjar's daughter, who they fought hard to get, and she lost her place towards the end of the season, but I think she will be a big player for them moving forward. And, you know, he got a lot of big players moulded together and playing together. And I think it was someone on the other podcast, when it was either Steph Young or Jen Cooper, said that Christine Sinclair had said, we've had talent every year, but unfortunately that hasn't mattered if they're not playing together. And that's what he's managed to do. He's managed to get that talent playing together. Tobin Heath was almost unplayable at times this year, and we'll talk about her probably in the MVP discussion. But yeah, Paul Riley, you have to give a shout, because at the end of the day, like you said, he came in very late. He inherited that team. He came in after the draft. They weren't his players. He obviously managed to bring in McCall and Leanne Sanderson, but that wasn't his team, and he managed to get them playing. I spoke to a number of them while I was out in Houston, and they all said how he'd gone in there. No expectations, no goals set. Tried to encourage a relaxed environment. Tried to get them playing together and focus on a three-year plan as opposed to trying to achieve things this year. And they've achieved early. You know, they're ahead of their goals, if anything. So I think he's worthy of being. And Jim Gabara as well. We haven't even mentioned. I mean, like you said, there is a case for everyone. Jim Gabara had a good season. Rory Dames has had another good season with Chicago. It's really, really difficult to kind of pick one. But yeah, I think it's difficult to look past Mark Parsons based on the pressure that he had going into Portland. But a notable mention for Paul Riley as well. MVP, obviously won by Lynn Williams. She was the Golden Boot winner. Jen, do you agree that Lynn Williams is the top goal scorer in the league, is also worthy of MVP?
You know, it's funny, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have been a lot more questioning of it than I am now. I mean, look what she did in the final and in the playoffs. But for me, if you look at, you know, what Tobin Heath did and what she brings to the table, and she's such an exciting player and, you know, pulls off things that no one else would even dream of doing, there's obviously a really great case for her, too. I mean, she had an incredible season. I'd say the best professional season she's ever had, so it was pretty much between those two. I think you could kind of make a case for Cleo High, but she can't. It was towards the second half of the season, you know, she'd be the MVP of, but we're talking a full season, so I'd say, you know, I'd probably tip it a little bit towards Tobin Heath.
JJ, I mean, before we come to you, if anything was going to typify Lynn Williams winning MVP, it was that cheeky penalty in the final that almost gone forgotten, but that was ridiculous to have that confidence for such a young player in a major final.
Yeah, just basically passing it into a corner. No nonsense. Yeah, I mean, for her, I think it's consistency. You look at Ojai, her massive second half, and I think for Tobin Heath, it was her first half of the season where what she was averaging, what, an assist and a half per game for the first 5 weeks or so. She was unreal, but Jen said it right. Those are two halves. We look to one full year, and for the player that we've said, Lynn Williams, I mean, she was good from start to finish, and she just kept improving and improving and improving, and once she got to the final, it showed. And I think that's why she is deserving of the award that she got, is, you know, she kept going. And also, unlike Ojai, who I believe really had to shoulder the load a bit, because at that time, Daly wasn't scoring, Becky wasn't scoring, Carly Lloyd wasn't there. She had to really do the entire, you know, do all the work. Lynn Williams was part of the scheme, and she wasn't also just scoring all the goals. She was assisting on a fair amount of them, too. So that's another big factor that a lot of people, I don't think, you know, they touch on. They remember her goals. Well, by the way, she had 5 assists, which were, I believe, I'm going to look this one up here. Yeah, she was top 5 in the league as well.
Well, it won her the Golden Boot, didn't it? It won her the Golden Boot because it was a tie between her and Kalia Ojai on number of goals. Lynn Williams had one more assist than Kalia.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Golden Boot should also encompass a little bit of that assist mark, because you are not just scoring goals, but you're helping goals to be scored. I know that's more of a college thing here in the U.S., but still, you know, that's a fair tiebreaker. I know some people weren't happy about it, but they do the same thing in the World Cup, too, so why should we have any difference? So, yeah, I'm all with Lynn Williams being the MVP.
I'm struggling to disagree with you. I disagree with you on the Golden Boot thing. I will say that. I spoke on another podcast this week. I spoke on the Mix Zone that Jen Cooper hosts. I think they should have shared it. We have 2 feet. Give one of them a left Golden Boot. Give one of them a right Golden Boot. There was no need. There's no need to split it. No, I mean, no need to give it to one person. Assists are a completely different category. I don't agree with the way that they've done it, I'm going to be honest. The World Cup, I believe they did it on minutes played. That's why Celia Sasic got Golden Boot over Carly Lloyd, because she played less minutes than Carly Lloyd did. If you want to do it like that, fine. Although I'm reliably informed from, I think, someone else that actually Lynn Williams played one game less than Kalia, so she would have actually won it based on that. But they should have shared it. You know, they've scored the same number of goals. Let them share it. There's no need to divide it up by going into assists or anything else like that. But MVP... Yeah, look, Lynn was one of those game changers throughout the whole season. Pace, power. You saw how she steps up for big occasions on Sunday. She was quiet throughout the whole game, if we're honest. And then she steps up and leaps above everyone to score that header in the 124th minute, then scores the cheeky penalty in the PK shootout. It's very, very difficult to look past her. I think we've mentioned Tobin Heath already. First half of the season, how many Player of the Week awards did she get? Player of the Month awards did she get? She was phenomenal at the beginning of the season, but drifted away. I think a couple of players, they're sticking with the Portland theme. Two players that performed well for me throughout when they were there. One was Ali Long. She again scores lots of goals from midfield. She again, a bit like Barnhart, has been one of the faces of the NWSL. And I, for one, I know she divides opinion, but I'm glad that she's in the US setup, because she's been rewarded for what she's done in the league, and she wasn't one of those players that was established in the setup before the league started. And actually, I think a little bit of her work's gone unnoticed. I thought Lindsay Horan had a good season since her move from PSG. I thought she was very good in midfield. She chipped in with goals. I think she was the perfect complement to players like Long and Heath in midfield, and I think she's a worthy shout as well. But there's so many, isn't there? It's kind of difficult to pick one. Kalia is another one. You know, how do you pick just one?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right about that, for sure. It's tough.
What about Team of the Year? Do you have a Team of the Year? I know that's not an award that they hand out, but, I mean, it sounds obvious that Western New York or Portland would be the Team of the Year based on the fact that one of them won the championship, one of them won the Shield. But did you have a team that you look at and you think they were actually Team of the Year based on what they achieved? Jen?
I mean, it's going to sound homerish, but I'd have to say the Spirit, because we have never seen a team as deep as the Spirit, from number one all the way to, you know, player 21, 22, if you count the reserves. They really bought into that, and it wasn't about one person with this team, whereas I think in the years past, it's always been one person who's been expected to do all the scoring. And if you saw some of the goals that they put out, and it was, you know, 7-8 touches, and then they'd maybe even more than that, 9-10 touches, and they'd score a goal. I think it was just emblematic of what the team was. You know, this is a team that finished second in the standings, but it doesn't really correlate to the first or second team. So I think if you think about what a team means, you know, the collective whole being greater than some of just the parts, I think that the Spirit would probably be the team of the year.
JJ?
I'm going to stick with Portland. I think, again, you know, we always have this debate, Kieran, regular season title, is it more worth it than the American system of having a playoff? With Portland and the fact that they're the most, you know, they're the consistent team from start to finish. So I think if you look at that, they're my player, or team of the year, I should say. They had that all-star caliber 11 from player 1 through player 11 on the field and players 12 through 20 on the bench. That's a tough team to break into and a lot of A-type personalities. But unlike in years past and under a new coach, they got it to work and, you know, fair play to them. They won the Shield. They just didn't get it done in the semifinal.
Yeah, I struggle with this one. I have to say the Western New York Flash, which I know is obvious, seeing as they won the league, but I think no one expected them to get into the playoffs, let alone win the championship. We've already discussed that Paul Riley came into the side very late, that they're a very young side, and that he managed to get them playing very, very quickly and has achieved something that has probably come a year or two early. So they would be my team of the year. I'll wrap it up with maybe one more, and I guess it would be, who is the player to look out for next season? And don't mention anyone from the draft, because it might be people that the individuals have not heard of. But based on what you saw this season, who is a player that you're looking forward to seeing next year that people should look out for, Jen?
I thought you were going to go with a different question. I thought you were going to go with who was left off the best and second 11 that you were, like, really annoyed with.
Well, do that. Do that. Who was left off of the first and second 11 that you were really annoyed with, Jennifer?
Kristen Edmund. She should have definitely been on it. I think if you look at what she meant to Orlando this year and, you know, finally playing where she should really be playing on the field, I think she had an incredible impact for that team and that squad, and especially one that was struggling as much as they did. She killed it. I think she killed it. I mean, with her free kick goals and stuff. And I think maybe that's where people get annoyed, is that there was some talk about some of the fouls and whether or not they were real fouls or whatever. Who cares? At the end of the day, she steps up, she takes a shot, it goes in. And she carried that team, you know, through the thick of it when, you know, Alex Morgan wasn't around. And I think she's not being recognized for, you know, what she did. And I think, you know, going to a new team, you know, going to a new team in and of itself, but then also a brand new franchise, I think she did really good, and she should have been, you know, one of the top 22 players in the league.
JJ, who are you angry not to see in the first or second 11?
Yeah, I'm going to echo those sentiments, not just because I wrote a piece about her, about how awesome she was this year, but I'm with Jen on all arguments. I mean, she accepted a new challenge in her, not only in her game, but her life. She wanted something different. She wanted to get herself better. And I think if she continues to go the way that she is, she will maybe knock back on the doorstep of being with the national team. I know she was obviously a key factor in the youth circuit, but can she do it the senior team? If she puts another year that she does in 2017 like she did this past season, then Jill Ellis is going to have to make some tough decisions and find a way to get her in there. But to go to your first question, Kieran, a player who I think is going to jump out from this season to carry forward to next year, Shea Groom. And the reason being is that she gets a call in this year. Hopefully this gets her, a little more confidence. And with FCKC getting some more help offensively, this could only help her become a more rounded striker, because she is one of those players that is not afraid of sticking her head where it shouldn't be, but to get a goal for her team. And she did that on a couple of occasions this year. So hopefully, you know, she can be that player that grows leaps and bounds for 2017.
Jen, do you want to come back to that one?
I think I was, you know, when Benini was healthy this year, I think she was incredible. So just what she was, and I know a lot of what she did was when the national team players were away, but I think just what she brings and that sort of, you know, South American flair is incredible. And I would just like to see what she can do for a full season if she can stay healthy, which unfortunately has proven to be a pretty big if. But that would be a player that I'd be, if she comes back, obviously, too. That's another thing. She's an international, but that's a player that I'm really curious to see what happens with next year.
Okay. Well, you've gone forward. JJ, who did you go for?
In terms of going ahead?
Yeah.
For next year?
Yeah.
Oh, I said Shea Groom.
Shea Groom. So you've gone forward. Jen's gone forward. I'm gonna
go forward.
I'm gonna go break them. I'm gonna break the mold. I'm gonna go defender, and I am looking forward to seeing how Abby Dolkemper builds on this season and the fact that she's been called into the US women's national team squad as well. Lots of competition in that centre back position, an unbelievable amount of competition when you think some of the players that haven't even made the squad. But Jill Ellis has said that she wants to change the face of the team and bring in younger players, and she's called up players like Abby, and I think that she could well be a big player next year for Western New York. And if she can establish herself for the club, there's no reason why she can't start to force her way into that US women's national team. But yeah, there's a whole host, isn't there? I mean, I think we said it earlier, no one player has stood out massively, but I think that's because so many players have played at such a high level. We saw last year Crystal Dunn almost single-handedly take the Spirit into the playoffs. This year, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Jen, Estefania Bonini was top scorer with 5.
Yeah.
And that's because the goals were spread around. You know, there were performances like Jess McDonald, who is a bit of a, we call them a journeyman over here, journeywoman in terms of the number of clubs that she's played for. She seems to have found a home in Western New York with 10 goals this season. So there's so many that have performed maybe higher than we expected. And, you know, 2017 should be pretty exciting, as you said, JJ, as well. Lots of good players to come out of the college draft as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's going away from your defender to a forward, albeit there are a few defenders available. It is going to be a striker-laden, heavy draft, and I'm looking all forward to it, folks. It's going to be fun.
Good stuff. Well, we know that it's going to be in Los Angeles, I think, the second week of January. Obviously, we were in Baltimore this year for the 2016 draft. 2017 draft will be, I guess, the next big event for the NWSL. Obviously, there are US Women's National Team friendlies that are taking place. 2 games against Switzerland coming up. 2 games against Romania coming up. Don't ask me to give my comment on the Romania games. Yeah, look, lots to look forward to next year. No major tournament for the US Women's National Team, so it'll be interesting to see how much of the season the national team players will be around. I've got no doubt that they will arrange friendlies over the course of the season in the FIFA windows, but we may well see for the first time since the NWSL started that players are available for the vast majority of the season. So it'll be really interesting to see how that one goes. But guys, I really, really appreciate your time. Thank you for giving your insight into an interesting season on the NWSL. Do you want to tell people, for those that don't know, how they can follow you on Twitter, Jennifer?
You can follow me at jgordon1987. On Twitter, and then also you can read my stuff on The Equalizer.
JJ, I always forget your handle.
Yeah, what the hell?
I know.
It's not cool.
JJ Duke 21?
At JJ Duke 21, yep, that's correct. JJDuke.com, and you could read my stuff at rgamemagazine.com or rgamemag.com.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give my Twitter handle because it's impossible to spell, so I need to get a new one. And you can read my stuff on The Equalizer and She Kicks magazine and the Football League Papers website when they have stuff on there. But until next season for the NWSL, we'll obviously cover off things during the off season. But until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.